This is Dennis Avey from Bradville, Hope Valley. Dennis, before we talk about how you have benefited, 84 years young, what are your memories of the war? I mean, I think in 1939 you were about to go to university, weren't you, when the war broke out?
That's right. I was just about to go because I'd had 5 years in engineering college pre-war, although my people were farmers. I was the black sheep of the family. Basically because we changed over from horses to mechanical, and that was my interest. A friend of my father's, Dudley Waugh, he took me into Tate & Lyle's and gave me, he said, give me him for 2 years before he goes to university to be able to apply his technical knowledge and what have you. Then the war broke out, and then, like a silly art, I joined up in September.
Now, that was pretty quick then.
Yes, indeed. And in point of fact, to cut a long story short, I was on the desert in 1940.
So you were in the 7th Armoured Division, Desert Rat?
The 7th Armoured Division was Lord Wavell. And I was with the Rifle Brigade those days, and which we had quite an experience. We had the Italian War first to put up with, which was virtually a doddle in some people's minds, but it truly wasn't. But then we were really clapped out after that. We made a dash right across the desert and knocked off the entire Italian army. That was the big days of the number of prisoners. There was hundreds of thousands of prisoners. And here we were with a half a division cutting the coast road and taking all those prisoners, and civilians as well, would you believe? However, they were all sent back and we went further on, but we were clapped up mechanically, so we had to go back for refit. And that was it. Well, a long time happened in between those, and we were up on the desert again. And I suppose I should get to the forgotten battle of Sidi Rezegh. That's south of Tobruk, around the Akroma airport,
So we're in Libya now, are we?
That's right,
yes,
in Libya.
Mm-hmm.
And we were making our way through to trying to cut Jerry's lines to Tobruk to get an easement there. Unfortunately, I was wounded and taken prisoner. I was taken into Benghazi hospital, German hospital. I looked after very well, and I must say this, the Africa Corps, I have great respect for them, great respect for them. Other people say possibly not, but in my experience, yes. Our chappies were pushing again, and I was whipped out of the hospital, put on a cargo boat with Germans going on leave, Italians, and I was three holds down, and we were out on the Mediterranean. Unhappily, we got a couple of tin fish, a couple of torpedoes, and the ship went down in about 10 minutes.
But you were below deck.
Pardon?
You were below deck, weren't you?
Yes, and I got up, I went hand over hand on a tarpaulin covering over the hatches that they'd opened up to let more air get into the... And I went hand over hand, as ill as I was, over that, got out on deck, straight into the... And then, would you believe it, they weren't satisfied with that. The boat went down, and a subchaser, an Italian subchaser, came around. I can see the name as clear as a bell. Centurion. I've tried to trace it, no luck. Then he started with depth charges, and it's quite an experience to be blown out of the water every time.
So there's the impact of the depth charge, and you
blew me out of the water, and it was like hitting you with a hammer.
My goodness.
But you still quite an experience.
You remain conscious.
Yeah, I was indeed. Adrenaline is a marvellous thing, you know. It's a great thing, believe me. It can get you through stone walls. And I was in the water, as far as I can tell, I calculate, about 20 hours, 24 hours, something like that. And I finally got to Greece. Thank you very much. And I got there, and I was in pretty hopeless condition, and absolutely stained with fuel oil. This was my undoing, because I was subsequently recognised, although farmers, the old boys helped me, great deal. I was very suspect when I had all this oil on it. I was had it on my face for about 12 months before it grew out. However, I was picked up by the Carabinieri and taken across to Italy. I was very suspect, put in a camp there. The diet was 120 grams of bread and a ladle full of soup. That was your daily ration for days. And then, although I had a question mark again, my name, because I was in civilian, or what you want to call civilian.
I see, when you came ashore, the Greeks dressed you today in peasant dress.
They gave me a lot of their clothing.
Right.
Or bits of their clothing, what it was. And I got to Italy, and I was in one of the bad camps there, and then taken into Germany. For me, as the Germans used to say, for you, Tommy, the war is over. Well, for a lot of us, it wasn't. We were still very much on duty. And unfortunately, I didn't go too well down with the Germans. They weren't my friends at all. And subsequently, I was sent to two punishment camps in Grodens. For escapement and what have you. Then the third time I was sent down a Gruby, that is a coal mine, in which Russian prisoners worked. I was the only Englishman down there. And they had no boots, absolutely no boots at all, no clothing, very poor, very bad situation. And one of these Russians got on a conveyor belt and cut himself some soles. Mm-hmm. And the Germans saw that, and that was sabotage. And 11 of us that were down there, the small Gruby, 5 were shot. We were in a line. I was about the 8th along. I said my prayers.
You must have thought you...
And I thought, before anything happens, it's one of these terrible thing. It's one of these things one does with red hair that I had and freckles to match. That was the character to match. I couldn't say no for an answer. However, the shooting stopped. I was taken on a week's interrogation, which isn't a verbal interrogation, I can assure you. And then I was sent to Auschwitz. I was in Auschwitz 18 months. It wasn't actually in Birkenau, the actual concentration camp. There was a camp alongside it, Monowitz. And we worked with the political prisoners from dawn to dusk, every day.
You're all
right. And 7 days a week. And to IG Farben. There was English people there, there were English chaps there, quite a number of them that probably fell by, weren't terribly friendly with the Germans, and eventually a number were in Monowitz. We worked every day with the Jewish people, with political prisoners, and it was a terrible job. You lived every day with people being killed alongside you, kicked to death, beaten to death, with this ghastly, smell of this crematoria, 24 hours a day. I can still, now and again, I can still taste it. And there it was, and we worked there. But it's an amazing thing with the human understanding, and unfortunately, it gets so used to people being killed alongside you. It doesn't mean all that much to you. It's not a horrible thing anymore. It becomes a day-to-day norm. And I would think I saw at least about 10 killed every day, kicked to death as well. I was working on laying some heavy electric cables with the Jewish, some Jewish prisoners. There was SS in charge. There was Wehrmacht as well, but SS in this particular case. And it was mud, and God knows what, it was cold and wet. And one of the guards were kicking this prisoner to death, and I interceded. And there was an SS officer came up behind me with a Luger and hit me right across the face. And as a result, subsequently, I lost an eye. But that was the norm. That was the norm. Then the Russians, we were there 18 months, and a number of people, a number of our chaps were shot. We lost a lot. We lost 30-odd chappies in a bomb, by bombing, the American bombing, which I buried, together with another couple of chaps, which we buried. And poor, and they weren't allowed to rest because we buried them, and subsequent bombing blew them up again, and their names weren't known. I have now found names and the final designation or the final resting place of these chappies at Krakow, and I've been able to know exactly where they are. I know all of them, and eventually, God willing, I will go.
Will you?
God willing. I've been meaning to go, but only of late I've been able to talk about things. It's by virtue of a lot of things, and it's only of late that I've had this urge to go, and to go to Alamein and virtually North Africa to visit all my old friends. And I have gone to the trouble in getting all the graves, the designation of all the graves, the numbers. I know exactly where they all are, and I intend to go.
You must go, Dennis.
Yes.
You must.
And I have been in touch with Polish people that I got a lot of information from them, and together with Auschwitz Museum as well. And they have given me a lot of help, and they've invited me over. A professor wants to take me on a visit to around the different areas and what have you. But there again. Well, the Russians started pushing in the end of December, and it was devilishly cold, snow, and they started marching us. They'd marched some of the political prisoners up before us, and we could see exactly the route they took, because there were bodies shot and died, what have you, for miles, and it became slower. And I was roughly about 800 miles we walked through. At one time it was over minus 40 degrees centigrade. And not always did we get a sleep bed for the night. Not a bed, a place to sleep for the night. Sometimes it was in snow. And it's amazing how you can survive living in that sort of temperature. I had frostbite. I had two lovely white balloons on my ears. I'm still suffering with frostbite on my toes now, would you believe it? But there it was. We made it through Poland, through Sudetenland, through Czechoslovakia, and just got into Germany. And then I'd had enough, because the food was absolutely zero. I must go back on food. The Red Cross, bless their hearts, they were our saviour. Because I don't know how, but we were recognised as a British society in Monowitz at Auschwitz. And every now and again we got parcels which saved our lives. Otherwise we would not have existed at all, without any doubt whatsoever. That saved our lives. We couldn't have survived on the German food at all. Black bread and cabbage soup, by Jove. And we got into Germany, and I'd had enough. Yeah. And I thought, well, this is it. So I Wicklaufed.
What's that mean?
Wicklaufed, well, for want of a better word, escaped.
Ate well.
And I made my way across through to Regensburg, and up to Nuremberg, and the old Americans wouldn't leave me alone there at Regensburg, because I was in the middle of a marshalling yard trying to get a train up north, and the Americans bombed it again. And I ran out of this marshalling yard. I'd never get as long as I live. I shouldn't have run. My own training should have told me that. And I was in this field outside, and I heard this whoosh, 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 whoosh. I looked up and I saw one of the super forts with a wing blown off, and then there's whooshing coming down. I thought, this is it. And a big whack right alongside me. And when they'd all gone, I looked at this and I dug it out, and it was a baseball stick. Obviously, it was one of the chappies, poor fellows in the plane, that carried it as a mascot. Didn't do him much cop.
Oh, very see what happened, my goodness.
And anyway, to cut a long story short, I made myself way up to Nuremberg. And believe me, Nuremberg, one had to see Nuremberg to see a devastating sight. I've never seen anything quite like it. There wasn't one brick nearly on another. And I cut the German, cut the American lines, and the first words out of this American commander, he had two Mills bombs on his chest. He was tooled up to the eyeballs, you know, two 45 pistols, ivory handled, don't forget that, strapped down. The first words to me in civilian was, "Where are these goddamn krauts?" Not "who are you" or "what have you." Anyway, that's neither here nor there. And they passed me off, and they got me up to Furt, and I was transferred and flown into Brussels. And then I had the great journey in a wonderful Lancaster into England. And they said, "Where would you like to go?" I said, "In the bomb bay." They said, "That's forbidden. That's forbidden. You can't." I said, "I want to go there." And they let me go in there, and I've never experienced anything quite like it. The North Sea, the channel, was like an oil pond with wreckage and oil and God knows. But the sight, the sight of the white cliffs and the greenery of England, you can never, there never has been anything quite like it. And that was it. And they took me to a camp, and I was scruff order. And they gave me a bit of an old uniform. They wanted me to stay. I wouldn't stay a day. I left that camp and I made my way home. I didn't have a penny in my pocket, but the old military came to mind, and I went up to Liverpool Street, and down from Liverpool Street down my little village in North Wheel for nothing. And that was the end of it.
Amazing. And, Dennis, that's just amazing.
Subsequently, and I don't know how they've done this, I never talked about my experiences at all until just of late, when something was released this spring. And the British Imperial War Museum rang me up not so very long ago. I don't know how they got hold of my name or what have you. And they said, "Would you do an interview for the Imperial War Museum?" I said, "Certainly." And a lady lecturer of London University came up for 2 days, and she took tapes of some of my experience. When she'd gone, I thought, God, I could have told her this, that and the other, and what have you. But again, it wasn't all a terrible experience. I must tell you this one, because it's a highlight. With all the devastation when we were in Auschwitz, we worked in IG Farben. We were marched back every day, and searched every day, because we used to work with civilian labour as well. And there was every known security, but the kitchen sink in there. there was everything from Arbeitsdienst and Hitlerjungen and SS, Wehrmacht, Totdienst, and it goes on, Gestapo. But having said that, we were able to do a little bit of, and the Polish people were very kind to us. And we marched back, and this fellow next door to me was searched. He was a little cockney. And they found inside his trousers a chicken, a very bedraggled, skinny chicken, and they dragged her. And there was hell let loose, sort of pistols came out, and as they do, they kick up a hell of a row. And three of us were taken to the bunker immediately. The bunker's a little prison, a stone, nothing there. Yeah. We were kept in there for the night, no food, no nothing. Then we came out for the helpman, two felt labels there. The helpman saw this little fellow. Where did you get these chickens? Where did you get this chicken? And this little cockney said, well, sir, I was working hard for the German people, as I should do. He said, and this chicken came down the track where I was working. He said, and it attacked me. He said, and I had to kill it in self-defense. I've never, ever yet experienced such a silence, a pregnant silence, they call it, I think. It went on, I thought, for minutes, and suddenly this helpman fell out of his chair on the floor, laughing. And of course, all the Feldwebels and whatever, he started laughing. And that was we got off.
Brilliant.
No one was killed. If they'd have found out where he got this chicken from, they'd have killed him.
Yeah. Dennis.
And that was the highlights.
Yeah. Dennis, your story is just amazing. Thank you so much for coming in and telling us.
It's my pleasure that I'm able to talk about it now, after all this time.
Now, you receive a war pension, don't you?
I do. I receive 100% war pension.
Rightly so, as well, from what you've just been saying. And did Dennis have to apply for this, Pat?
Do you want to tell your own story, Dennis?
Well, how it happened? After the war, I was in hospital for 2 years on a series of operations and what have you. And over this 2 years, people used to come and see me, and doctors, they said, you should be applying for a pension. I said, what for? You know, I didn't know anything about war pension or whatever. I said, you should apply. I said, I don't know. Anyway, subsequently, they bought me forms, which I didn't fill in. They filled in for me. I was in bed. And I applied. And then, as the norm, I suppose, they went to a higher office. What do they call the higher office?
Probably where it's assessed. Where the benefits
in the higher assessment. And I was brought back the report on this final assessment. It said, this gentleman's statement is to be taken without question. Now, I couldn't believe this at all. And I got a pension, which subsequently, and the efforts of the War Pension Agency has virtually saved my mentality, if you like, and my life financially, because I've had a big financial bang after the war. I was an engineer. I did very, very well as an engineer. I finally got to be a group engineer. I retired at 50, and unfortunately, like a silly ass, I trusted people, and I lost a king's ransom.
Mm.
And although I used to, I had a very good hobbies as well. I used to do 3-day eventing as well, and dressage and whatever, which I practiced for years. And then I had to sell all that up, and I came. And as a result, and progressively, the War Pension Agency has saved my life. I didn't know anything about them. They came to see me. And more particularly, in the deafness, for argument's sake, a lady came up. I didn't know who she was from Adam. She came from War Pension Agency. And the television, which was my only bit of fun, I couldn't hear unless the volume was turned up. And my dear wife, she couldn't stay in the room. And this lady came up and she said, "Righto, we're going to fit you up with the, we're going to wire the room and put your an amplifier in." It made my life. It made it, really, seriously made it. So much so that if I'm out of the room, I can even hear what's going on. That's how good it was. And then progressively, the War Pensions Agents, Tim Alton, came up to see me, and he said, you should be having this and that and t'other. I said, I didn't know anything about it. And of course, the older you get, the more you start building walls around oneself and say, that's it, and that's it, finished. But they opened the way up for me. They employed the social services, they put in equipment for me that makes life bearable, you know, handrails and things I can pull myself out of bed with, and in the bath, handrails, etc., etc. And life is bearable, and progressively they've been marvellous with me.
Dennis Avey, thank you so much for coming in.
It's my great pleasure.
If people want to know more about claiming a war pension, you need to ring our action desk now on 370707. That's Derby 370707. Pat, Dennis, thank you so much for coming in. Thank you.